The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Yunkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles principally from the Harvard Heart Letter. The first article is going to be entitled Gifts That Promote Relaxation and Resilience. And this is from the most recent Harvard Heart Letter of December 2021. This holiday season, give loved ones, friends, and yourself a gift that helps counteract the harmful effects of stress. Life is full of stressful situations, from minor annoyances like a broken appliance to a more serious concern like living through a natural disaster. And for nearly 2 years now, the relentless anxiety related to the COVID-19 pandemic has put everyone on edge. More than ever, we all need to include stress-busting strategies in our daily routine. For people at risk for cardiovascular disease, relaxation rituals are especially important. Chronic stress sets off a cascade of physical changes that raise blood pressure, elevate levels of unhealthy fats in the bloodstream, and make blood clots more likely. But you can help counter the harmful consequences of the stress response by evoking the opposite reaction, the relaxation response. It's the physiological reverse of the stress response. Your breathing slows, your heart rate drops, and your blood pressure goes down, says Laura Malloy, clinical social worker at the Benson Henry Institute for Mind-Body Medicine at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. She directs the Institute's Stress Management and Resiliency Training, which is called SMART. Program for Successful Aging, which teaches people how to elicit the relaxation response through practices like meditation, yoga, body scans, breath focus, and guided imagery. If you or someone you know could use a little extra incentive to start one of these health-preserving habits, here are some gift ideas Malloy recommends that can provide encouragement and support, or simply make the experience more pleasurable. The first is meditation aids. Meditation, which is perhaps the best known and best studied method for cultivating the relaxation response, may sound simple. You just sit with your eyes closed and breathe, right? In fact, it's often challenging to meditate regularly on your own without support and guidance. Meditation apps like Headspace, Calm, and Simple Habit include features that can help you to stick to a meditation practice, like a targeted and personalized meditation and reminder notification. Consider giving someone a year's subscription. The next suggestion is props for yoga. Yoga combines rhythmic breathing with a series of postures or flowing movements that often culminate in a brief meditation. In addition to fostering relaxation, certain poses can also ease tight, tense muscles, a common byproduct of stress. Because many yoga studios now offer classes online, gifts that support a home yoga practice may be welcome, says Malloy, who's also the director of yoga at the Benson Henry Institute. In addition to a yoga mat, other helpful props include yoga blocks, straps, bolsters, and eye pillows. Other ideas include yoga books or magazine subscriptions, or a yoga deck, a deck of cards. That depicts different yoga poses. Finally, you might give a gift certificate to a local yoga studio to purchase classes or props. Muscle and joint relaxation. People prone to tension headaches or tight muscles in the upper body may appreciate products designed to relax those areas. These include simple neck wraps that resemble travel pillows that you can warm in a microwave to fancier mechanical versions with heat and massage functions. Self-massage can be very calming for the nervous system, says Malloy, who includes foot massage as part of her daily routine. A gift of scented massage oil and a pair of cozy socks are a nice way to foster this habit. Stress and worry often rob people of a good night's sleep, so products that nurture sounder sleep may be helpful. Some people swear by weighted blankets, which are filled with plastic beads or pellets and weigh from 3 pounds to upwards of 20 pounds. The blankets are supposed to replicate the tight swaddling that helps newborns feel snug, secure, and sleepy. An eye mask can help block potentially distracting light, while a sound machine can help screen out unwanted noise. Many offer a range of relaxing nature sounds, like gentle ocean waves or rain falling in a forest, says Malloy. Taking a warm bath about an hour before retiring may help promote sleep, so you could give someone a bath pillow or scented bath salts, she suggests. Lavender is said to be calming, so lavender-based products like soaps, candles, or linen sprays might be appreciated. A cup of herbal tea can be soothing pre-bedtime, especially chamomile tea. Another suggestion is called a gratitude or worry journal. A blank journal and high-quality pen can help people write out their worries to help ease stress. Alternatively, the journal could be a place to write down 3 things you feel grateful for each day. Malloy recommends doing this gratitude journal practice just before bedtime, so you can focus on positive things before drifting off to sleep. A related gift some may appreciate is an adult coloring book. Filling in the intricate, repetitive designs may promote mindfulness and reduce anxiety. Finally, most people would welcome a respite from daily tasks like cooking, cleaning, and caregiving. Bring someone a special homemade dinner or buy a weekly meal delivery. Hire a house cleaning service or offer to care for an older parent, child, or pet for a day. These more personal presents are often mutually beneficial. Malloy notes, if you provide the help yourself, you'll also benefit from the experience because doing good for others makes you feel good too. Right adjacent to this article is a short article entitled Fruit of the Month. And the fruit of the month is the citrus fruit. Like all the fruits we've featured this year, citrus fruits contain heart-healthy nutrients like fiber and flavonoids. That's a good reason to enjoy oranges, mandarin oranges, tangerines, or tangelos as snack, or in meals on a regular basis. Other fruits in this group have additional properties relevant to people who have or are at risk for heart disease. For example, grapefruit contains furanocoumarin and related compounds that bind to an enzyme in your gut that partially breaks down certain drugs, including some cholesterol-lowering statins. That means more drug gets absorbed, which can boost blood levels and thereby increase the risk of side effects. But some statins, including pravastatin or Pravacol and rosuvastatin or Crestor, aren't as affected by grapefruit as other statins. If you love this tangy fruit and take a statin, ask your doctor about whether you should switch to one of those types. Both the juice and the zest or outer rind of a lemon deliver a flavor boost to many heart-healthy foods, like grilled fish, veggies, and salads, and may inspire you to use less salt. To trim calories from your diet, add slices of lime to sparkling water as a substitute for sugary sodas. Now we're going to go over some brief articles from the December 2021 Harvard Heart Letter. These come under the heading, Research We're Watching. The first is called, Healthy Sleep Patterns Are Linked to a Lower Risk of Heart Rhythm Problems. People who report healthy sleep habits are less likely to have certain heart rhythm disorders, new research finds. The study relied on data from the UK Biobank, a large database of health and genetic information in the United Kingdom. More than 400,000 participants answered 5 questions about their sleep habits. Healthy sleep patterns were defined as being a morning person, sleeping 7 to 8 hours a night, not snoring, and rarely or never having insomnia or daytime drowsiness. The opposite of those characteristics, including sleeping too little, were considered poor sleep habits. Compared with people with the poorest sleep habits, those with the healthiest habits had a 29% lower risk of developing atrial fibrillation, a rapid irregular rhythm, and a 35% lower risk of bradyarrhythmia, which is a slow irregular rhythm. The findings, which appeared in the September 2021 issue of the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, add to growing evidence that both the quality and quantity of sleep play a role in cardiovascular health. Next in Research We're Watching is a short article entitled, Switching to a Salt Substitute May Reduce Stroke Risk. Swapping regular table salt, which is of course sodium chloride, with a salt substitute containing some potassium chloride may lower the risk of strokes and related heart problems, according to a large study from China. Diets high in sodium but low in potassium are known to raise blood pressure and increase the risk of heart disease, including stroke, as well as increasing the risk of early death. For the study, researchers recruited 21,000 adults from rural villages in China and gave half of them a salt substitute that contained 25% potassium chloride. The others were told to keep using regular salt. The average age of these Chinese villagers was 65. Most had high blood pressure, and 73% had already experienced a stroke. After a follow-up of nearly 5 years, rates of stroke, major heart-related problems, and deaths were slightly lower among the people using the salt substitutes. And elevated potassium levels, a potentially worrisome side effect, were not more common among those using the substitutes. The study was published September 16, 2021, in the New England Journal of Medicine. Finally, there is a brief article entitled, Less Heart Disease in People with a Dairy-Rich Diet. People who eat more dairy fat, which is plentiful in whole milk, yogurt, and cheese, may be less likely to develop heart disease than people who eat smaller amounts of dairy. For the study, researchers measured blood levels of a fatty acid found mostly in dairy foods in 4,150 60-year-olds in Sweden, a country known for its love of dairy-based foods. After an average follow-up of 16.6 years, they found that people with a higher level of the fatty acid had the lowest risk of cardiovascular disease. The study authors confirmed these findings after combining the Swedish results with similar data from the United States, Denmark, and the United Kingdom. The study was published in September 21, 2021 issue of PLOS Medicine. While the findings don't prove that dairy fat protects against cardiovascular problems, it suggests that full-fat dairy products may be less harmful to heart health than experts have previously thought. Now we're going to continue with the Harvard Heart Letter of December 2021, and we're going to go to Ask the Doctor. This is a section written by Dr. Deepak L. Bhatt, who is the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Heart Letter. Measuring ejection fraction. After my echocardiogram, my doctor said that my ejection fraction was on the low side, and I should get it checked again in a few months. What exactly does the term ejection fraction mean? And Dr. Bhatt responds, ejection fraction is the fraction, expressed as a percentage of the blood, that your heart ejects out to the rest of your body each time it contracts. For example, an ejection fraction of 60% means that every time your heart beats, 60% of the blood in the main pumping chamber, the left ventricle, is squeezed out by the heart muscle contracting. Because we're used to thinking that 100% is ideal, an ejection fraction of 60% may sound low, but healthy hearts pump out only about a half to two-thirds of the blood from the left ventricle. So a normal ejection fraction is 55 to 70%. An ejection fraction between 40 and 50% is borderline low. Sometimes this reflects heart muscle that was weaker but is now recovering. Other times, a slow decline in heart muscle function is to blame. Anything below 40% means the heart is struggling to provide sufficient blood to the body. One possible cause of a low ejection fraction is damage from a previous heart attack. Another is cardiomyopathy, a disease of the heart muscle that has many different causes, including viral infection and genetic disorders. A leaky valve or a narrowed heart valve or chronic untreated high blood pressure can also decrease ejection fraction. An abnormally fast heart rate for a long period of time, like from uncontrolled atrial fibrillation, can make the heart appear weak. Sometimes heart muscle function improves once the underlying cause is treated, but unfortunately not always. An echocardiogram, which is a heart ultrasound, is the most common way to measure ejection fraction. But other tests can also provide the measurement. One that is often done to investigate chest pain is called a nuclear stress test, in which a radioactive substance is injected into a vein and a special camera detects the radiation. The resulting images reveal blood flow in the heart muscle. Another is cardiac catheterization, in which a cardiologist snakes a thin tube through an artery in the arm or leg up to the heart. The primary purpose is to look for blocked arteries, but with an additional step, an extra picture can reveal how well the left ventricle is pumping. Other imaging techniques, including MRI or CT, can also measure ejection fraction. Be aware that if you have more than one of these tests, the ejection fraction measurement may differ slightly. And remember that the ejection fraction is just one number. Many other factors help determine how well the heart is working. The next article from the Harvard Heart Letter is entitled High Intensity Exercise in Your Heart. Brief bursts of strenuous exercise may be safe for some, but not all, older adults. The fitness trend known as High Intensity Interval Training, or HIIT, H-I-I-T, is still going strong at gyms and in online workout classes. HIIT features short bursts of high-intensity exercise, usually from 1 to 4 minutes, interspersed with periods of low-intensity activity or rest. But is it a good idea for everyone? Well, not necessarily. HIIT is a great regimen for people who are young and healthy. If you're older or have heart disease, check with your doctor before trying it, says Dr. Imin Lee, a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and an expert on the role of physical activity in preventing disease. Increasingly, cardiac rehabilitation programs are using tailored versions of HIIT. Remember, a cardiac rehabilitation program is one which helps people recover from heart attacks and related conditions. But these closely monitored sessions start with an exercise stress test to make sure people don't have symptoms like chest pain, which might make strenuous exercise dangerous. Outside of such settings, HIIT may be unsafe for people who have or are at risk for heart disease. One of the largest randomized controlled trials of HIIT, published last year in BMJ Open, suggests that healthy people in their 70s can do these workouts with little risk. But in terms of longevity, moderate intensity exercise is just as good. The main advantage to HIIT is that you can boost your cardiovascular fitness faster by working harder instead of longer. Some small short-term studies hint that HIIT workouts can produce equal or greater improvements in blood pressure and blood sugar compared with moderate intensity exercise. But because the duration and intensity of the interventions in these studies varied, it's hard to generalize about the benefits, Dr. Lee says. The BMJ Open study included 1,567 healthy, active Norwegians with an average age of 73. About half, who are the control group, were assigned to do 30 minutes of exercise most days. The rest got the same instructions, but half were assigned to replace two of the week's exercise sessions with HIIT workouts. The other half swapped in moderate intensity continuous training twice weekly. During the five-year follow-up, just three people in the study had adverse events, and these were injuries from slipping while exercising outdoors. There were no survival differences among the three groups, although there were slightly fewer deaths in the HIIT group. One possible explanation for the similarity in outcomes is that people in the control group exercised more than expected, including doing some HIIT exercise, and only about half of those in the HIIT group actually did regular high-intensity workouts. Also, the people who agreed to participate in the study were more active than the general population, and they had a death rate that was about half of that expected in the general population of the same age. So what's the take-home message? If you get your doctor's okay, go ahead and try adding some high-intensity sessions into your workout, whether that's jogging, cycling, and swimming, or other aerobic exercise. But if that extra effort and sweat sounds unpleasant, don't be concerned that you're missing out. If doing HIIT fits in with your lifestyle, go for it. But the most important thing is to find an activity you enjoy and keep doing it regularly. I have to point out, just in reading this, that any experiment in which the study group had only half of them actually doing what they were supposed to do is going to be pretty hard to interpret and not very helpful. The article has a little additional blurb called A Tale of Two Workouts. Researchers compared two workout strategies in healthy adults aged 70 to 77 during a five-year study in Norway. The moderate intensity continuous training workout involved exercising for 50 minutes. That's 5-0. Participants aimed for a target heart rate of 70% of their estimated maximum heart rate. The 4x4 HIIT workout, on the other hand, lasted 43 minutes, and it included a 10-minute warm-up, either walking or jogging, then a 4-minute period of high-intensity exercise, to 85 to 95% of maximum heart rate. Then 3 minutes of lower intensity exercise, either jogging or brisk walking, at only 60% of maximum heart rate. And then repeating the high intensity exercise and the lower intensity exercise for a total of 4 cycles, and then a 5-minute cool down. The article also points out that if you want to figure out what your maximum heart rate is, you should subtract your age from 220. And then if you want to figure out what 60% of that maximum heart rate is, multiply the result by 0.6. So for example, the maximum heart rate for a 75-year-old would be 145. That's 220 minus 75. So 60% of that would be a heart rate of 87. Well, I don't think we'll have enough time to read another article, but we'll continue with the Harvard Heart Letter next time. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, and that website is ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I sure hope you enjoyed it. Thank you.